This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of White Rose, Black Forest by Owen Dempsey, performed by Napoleon Ryan. Author's note: White Rose, Black Forest is inspired by true events. However, certain factual elements and the timing of events have been altered for the sake of the narrative. Chapter 1. The Black Forest Mountains, Southwest Germany, December 1943. This seemed a fitting place to die. A place where she had once known every field and tree, every valley, where the rocks had names, where meeting places were described in clandestine languages adults could never understand. A place of gushing mountain streams, shining like burnished steel in the summer sun. This was where she'd felt safe. Now even this place felt poisoned, ruined, all beauty and purity choked to death. The quilt of snow was thick on the ground, unrelenting as far as she could see in any direction. She closed her eyes, pausing for a few seconds. The haunted howling of the wind, a rustle in the branches of snow-laden trees, the rushing of her breath, and the beating of her heart. The night sky loomed above. She kept on, the crunching sound of her footsteps resuming. Where was the right place to do such a thing? Who would find her? The thought of some children out playing in the snow coming across her body was too much to bear. Perhaps it would be better to turn back, to relent for one more day at least. A tear formed in the corner of her eye and slid down the numbed skin of her face. She walked on. The falling snow began to thicken, and she adjusted her scarf to cover her face. Perhaps the elements would take her. That would be a most fitting end, a return to the nature she'd loved so much. Why was she even still walking? What was there to gain from wandering through the snow like this? Surely the time had come to just be done with it, to end the agony. She reached into her pocket and felt the smooth metal of her father's old revolver through her gloves. No, not yet. She continued forward. She'd never see the cabin again, or anything, or anyone, for that matter. She would never know how the war would turn out, or see the National Socialists fall, or that madman stand trial for his crimes. She thought of Hans, his beautiful face, the truth in his eyes, and the unimaginable courage in his heart. She hadn't even had a chance to hold him one last time, to tell him that he was the reason that she believed that love could still exist in this grotesque world. They'd cut his head off, tossed it into the casket alongside his body, and laid him down beside his sister and his best friend. The snow was still coming down, but she kept on, the trees of the forest on her left as she crested a hill. Her eyes had adjusted to the darkness, and something ahead caught her attention, a mound in the snow about 200 yards away. A body, crumpled, like a bunch of rags in the pristine white. No footprints leading to it. It wasn't moving, but the still-attached parachute ruffled in the wind, licking at the snow like a thirsty animal. She instinctively swiveled her head, even though she hadn't seen a living soul in days. She moved forward with caution, the paranoia ingrained in her, making her perceive every shadow and every breath of wind as a deadly threat. But there was nothing, and no one. The snow was gathering on his unmoving body, much of him almost invisible against the film of white. His eyes were closed. She brushed snow off his face and reached for his pulse. The patter of his heartbeat came through the skin in his neck. Icy white breaths plumed out from between his lips, but his eyes remained closed. She drew back, looking around in a desperate search for some kind of help. She was utterly alone. The nearest house was hers, the cabin her father had left her, but that was almost 2 miles. The closest village was 5 miles or more, an impossible distance in these conditions, even if he were conscious. She brushed the snow off his chest to reveal a Luftwaffe uniform with the insignia of a captain. Of course he was one of them. One of the monsters who had destroyed this country and taken away everyone she had ever loved. Who would know if she left him to die? She should just leave him like this. Soon, they would both be dead, and no one would ever know. It would merely amount to 2 more bodies in the snow to join the deluge. She trudged a few paces away. Her legs stopped moving, and then, before she realized she'd made the decision, she was bent over him once more. She tapped him on the cheek, calling out. She pulled up his eyelids, but elicited no response other than a gentle groan. The Luftwaffe captain was propped up by the backpack he wore, his head lolling back, his arms spread on either side. He was tall, probably 6 feet or more, and might have weighed almost double what she did. A claw of anxiety dug into her as she thought about the impossibility of carrying him back to the cabin. There was no way. Still, she tried to lift him, and managed only a few inches before her legs gave way and she slipped, dropping him back onto the snow. His backpack must have weighed at least 50 pounds, and the parachute another 10. The parachute could stay on for now, but the backpack had to come off. After a few seconds of trial and error, she undid the straps on his backpack and pulled it out from under him, causing his body to collapse back onto the snow with a gentle thud. She put the pack to the side and glanced at the sky. The snow was coming heavier. They didn't have long. She checked his pulse again. It was still strong, but for how much longer? An impulse drove her to plunge a hand into his jacket pocket. She took out his identification papers. His name was Werner Graf. He was from Berlin. And in his wallet was a picture of a woman she assumed was his wife, posing with 2 smiling daughters, around 3 and 5. He was 29, 3 years older than she. A deep breath billowed out of her lungs as she stood to stare at Werner Graf. She had trained and worked to help other people. That was who she had been, and who she could be again, if only for a few hours. She placed the papers back into his pocket before moving around behind him again. She put her arms under his armpits and heaved with every sinew of strength she had. His upper body moved, but his legs caught in the snow, and he let out a loud yelp of pain as they came free. His eyes were still closed. She placed him back down and moved around to examine his legs. His pants were ripped, and she almost recoiled as she felt broken bones pressing against his skin. Both legs were broken below the knee. It was possibly the fibulae, but certainly the tibiae that were affected. They would heal in time if set properly, but walking was going to be impossible for now. Perhaps it would be better to let him pass gently in his sleep and die here in the snow. She went to his backpack and opened it to find several changes of clothes and more papers, which he placed at the side. At the bottom, she found matches, food, water, a sleeping bag, and 2 pistols. She wondered why on earth a Luftwaffe pilot would be carrying such things. 2 guns. Perhaps he was dropping behind enemy lines in Italy, but that was hundreds of miles from here. There was little time. Wasting time on questions would cost Werner Graf his life. She thought of his wife and daughters, innocent of the crimes he might have committed on behalf of the Reich. She wasn't carrying much herself, just the loaded revolver. It was all she thought she'd need tonight. Memories of the snowbound winters of her youth came to her, the times she'd spent in this very field. The tree line she'd been skirting was only a few hundred yards away, and that distance had proved the gap between life and death for Werner Graf. She would never have found him if he'd landed in there, even if he had survived the landing. She took the sleeping bag out of his backpack, opened it up, and spread it across him before leaning down in front of his face.
"You'd better be worth saving,"
she whispered.
"I'm doing this for your wife and daughters."
The field they were in was on a plateau, with the trees leading down a hill to a valley below. The conifers were covered in snow that drifted to 10 feet deep or more. It took a minute or two to get over to where the trees were. She crouched and burrowed into the snow. The powder was soft and she was able to make quick progress. No one else was coming. This snow cave would be their only chance of making it through the night. Thoughts of ending her own life could wait until she saved his. She went to check on him. He was still alive. A tiny light flickered within her, like a distant candle in a dark hollow. She made her way back over to the hole, not thinking about how she was going to get him there, just focusing on digging, one handful at a time. Another 20 minutes and the snow cave was big enough. She climbed down inside, using her own body to smooth out the snow. She made a shelf with her hands before poking out an air hole in the top with a long stick she'd taken from outside. She made her way back over to where Werner lay, took the backpack and the sleeping bag, and brought them across to the snow cave. It was just long enough for him to lie down, with enough space to sit up. It would do. She made her way back across to him. It must have been after midnight. The relative safety of the morning seemed years away. There would be no way to move him farther than the cave until the blizzard subsided. She took the nylon of the parachute, still attached to the straps across his shoulders, and heaved. An ugly grimace of pain came over his face as his body slid along the snow. She grasped the parachute again, pulling as hard as she could. Her legs gave way, but she'd dragged him 6 more feet. This was possible. Hope ignited within her, sending streams of adrenaline through her beleaguered body. She heaved again and again. It took 20 minutes. She was wet with sweat under her thick scarf and coat, but they reached the edge of the snow cave. It was the first time she'd felt anything like triumph in what seemed like a lifetime. Perhaps since the first leaflets of the White Rose, when the excitement of standing up for what was right had overtaken them, when the promise of a better future for the German people had seemed like a reality for the first time in a generation. Werner Graf was still unconscious. Nothing was going to wake him. Not that night. The goal of him opening his eyes again drove her forward. It didn't matter who he was anymore, just that he was a human being, and that he was still alive. She took a few seconds to rest before pushing him down the slope she'd constructed into the cave. He moaned again, the bones in his legs giving a sickening crack as she pushed him down. The snow was still drifting down from the dark sky above, and the wind howled like a voracious wolf. The cave lit up as she struck a match she'd taken from his backpack. He hadn't really looked at him before. He'd only been a stricken body, not a man. He was handsome, unshaven, with short brown hair. She extinguished the match and reached around to pull the sleeping bag around him. She lay down next to him, able to hear the pitch of his shallow breaths and the dull thudding of his heartbeat within his chest. They were going to need each other's body heat to make it through this night. She put an arm around him. She hadn't touched a man like this since before Hans died, 10 months earlier. Overcome with exhaustion, she spiraled into a deep sleep. The sound of screaming jarred her, yanked her from the escape of sleep. It took a few seconds to realize where she was, what was going on. The dark of the cave dulled her senses until she peered up at the opening above her head. The light of the moon was visible now. His head flipped to one side. His body was still warm. He was dreaming. She settled back down beside him, using his arm as a pillow. Her eyes were just closing when he screamed out again, "No, please, no! Please stop!" Her blood froze. What he said was unmistakable. It was English. Chapter 2. She lay motionless, paralyzed by shock. No more words escaped his lips. His eyes were still clamped shut. It was still night. She was still lying beside this man, whoever he was. His chest expanded in time with his breath, more solid now. She had already saved him, but to what fate? She tried to reason that he was indeed Werner Graf, but how could he be? What Luftwaffe officer would call out in English in their sleep? She wasn't fluent by any means, but she knew the smooth rhythm of English words. It wasn't hard to recognize. Who was this man? And what would happen to him if she turned him over to the local police? It would be tantamount to giving him to the Gestapo. He was dressed in a Luftwaffe uniform. If he was British or American, there was no question that he would be treated and shot as a spy. She would die before she'd help the local Gestapo extend its reign of terror. So what was she to do? She raised herself off his body and shimmied out of the snow cave. The icy air bit at her exposed face and felt almost liquid as she pulled it into her lungs. The snow had stopped. The clouds had been cleared aside like a soiled tablecloth and revealed the stars burning against the ink black of the sky. The winds had calmed to a gentle tickle on the tree branches. All else was unmoving. What would happen if she left him? Would he ever emerge from his sleep? Would he even be able to raise himself out of the cave once he came to? The field she dragged him across was smoothed over, beautiful now. Anyone could have wandered past them and never known that they were there. But the morning was coming. They were isolated up here. People were rare, but far from unheard of. She estimated that she had at least 3 hours until the low winter sun limped over the horizon to illuminate the forest. Only 3 hours before they might be spotted. A cross-country skier could happen upon them as they were struggling back through the snow. And then, any decision-making would be taken out of her hands. This man would succumb to the Gestapo by the consensus of strangers. It was always easier to side with the Gestapo. A citizen would be rewarded for doing so, thrown in jail for not. It required supernatural strength not to do the Gestapo's bidding. That was the genius of their system. It took fortitude of an almost unimaginable scale to do the right thing. Not reporting your neighbors was as dangerous as the antisocial activities that the Gestapo was so interested in. It meant that they had spies everywhere. It meant that the German look, a swift furtive glance to make sure no one was watching, was a part of everyday life now. The specter of her previous plans returned. She had expected her body to be found the next day, had wanted it that way. She could have wandered into the middle of the forest, where no one would have found her for months, where her flesh would have faded from her bones, leaving only the white of her skeleton to be uncovered. It seemed she had little choice now but to abandon those plans and help this man instead. If she left him in the hole, he would die. If she turned him over to the authorities, he would die. She would have to live with the knowledge that she had helped further the perverted will of the Gestapo and the regime they represented. If she waited until dawn, she might meet someone else who would force her hand, and he would die, and perhaps she along with him. There didn't seem to be any choice at all. The snow had smoothed over the footprint she'd made getting here, but she knew these hills and meadows, snow-covered or not. She began hiking back to the cabin. It would take more than an hour to get there, and the same to return to him. Was he a spy, or an escaping prisoner of war? But if he was a POW, why would he have jumped out of a plane into Germany? Perhaps his plane had been shot down, or had run into some technical trouble, and he'd been forced to bail out. Why else would he be here, in the middle of the mountains? Freiburg was only around 10 miles away. Maybe he had been blown off course. Yet she'd heard no plane, and seen no flak in the sky on the way out here. The bombing raids were coming more frequently, even here. Thoughts of the bombs dropping brought with them the memory of her father, and the pain that had driven her out here with his pistol in her pocket soon followed. But the remembrance of the man in the snow cave forced her back into the moment, driving her feet forward. She made her way down the hill she'd found the man on, back the way she came, and soon she could no longer see the snow cave, nor the tree she'd dug it under.
"Try not to worry about things you can't control," she said out loud.
It felt good to hear her own thoughts, felt almost as if there was someone there with her, and she wasn't alone in trying to save this man's life.
"What are you doing?"
she said.
"Why are you getting involved with this man you don't know?"
The words had come out as if spoken by someone else. She was in a state of near exhaustion when the cabin came into view. The door was unlocked, and she pushed it open. She had never expected to come here again, yet she had left it immaculately clean, a gift for the people who would find it. She took off her snowshoes, leaving them at the door as she went inside. She removed her gloves before fumbling with the matches that lay on a nearby table. The room glowed from the candle she lit, and she caught a glimpse of herself in the mirror before jerking her eyes away. She had no desire to confront her own reflection. The embers of last night's fire were dead in the fireplace. The wood was out back. That would be a job for later. She paced down the hall into the living area and found a bottle of brandy she then stuffed in her coat pocket. She put her hands on her head and searched her mind for anything else that might help her on the way back here with him. Her journey alone had been arduous enough. She began to wonder if it was even possible, and contemplated sitting down and closing her eyes, just to rest for a while. She poured herself a cup of water and finished it in seconds. She put the cup back down and placed a kitchen knife in her pocket. The door to the bedroom she'd slept in last night was ajar, the bed stripped, the covers stacked at the end in a neat pile. The bed represented an impossible luxury, everything she could possibly have wanted in that moment. She knew what her resting would mean for the man in the snow. She closed the bedroom door and walked out the back and into the night once more. The firewood she'd gathered the week before sat untouched, speckled with a light coating of snow blown under the awning that protected it. She eyed the sled she'd used to drag the logs back from the forest. It was sturdy, well able to take his weight. She dragged it around the side of the house before going inside again. The cuckoo clock on the wall struck 5 a.m. The 2-inch-high figurine of a man emerged and struck the bell 5 times with a hammer. Frady, her brother, had loved that clock. The joy that stupid clock gave him had been the only thing that had stopped her from smashing it. Everything he'd loved, anything he'd touched, was pure gold now.
"Frady,"
she said, as the man disappeared back inside the clock.
You see what I'm doing, don't you? I need you with me. I need to feel you with me. I can't do this without you.
She hadn't said his name aloud in months. Hadn't allowed herself to. It had been too much. It was best to forget. To ignore the past in order to control the agony. But she needed him now. Needed to feel love again. She tried to remember the love she'd felt. Tried to draw it from deep within her. Like precious water is drawn from a desert well. She balled her hand into a fist, took a heavy breath, and opened the front door. The wind was gone. The air was as still as death itself. She grasped the cord attached to the front of the sled and set out across the snow. Her footprints were still visible and would remain that way until the next snow came. Anyone would be able to follow her. The blanket of night would hide them for another couple of hours, but after that, they'd be visible to anyone out for a morning stroll. How would she explain hauling a prostrate Luftwaffe airman through the snow on a sled? She'd think of those lies if she needed to. For now, the only thing that mattered was putting one foot in front of the other. The fear that he would be dead haunted her for the entire journey back. What if the Gestapo had been tracking him? What if they'd seen his parachute and hadn't had the chance to capture him during the storm? Surely, they'd be on their way up to the field now. Savage memories came to her of interrogations, of jail cells, of the cold gray eyes of the Gestapo man who had questioned her. Relief only came as she sighted the field. The pressing matter of evading detection drowned out her thoughts. The field was empty as she'd left it. She listened. No sound. The silence of the night had a story to tell. The trees were still, the snow dense and heavy. She waited 2 minutes, but then realized she was wasting time. No one had seen him, but someone would unless she acted soon. She peered around the tree she was hiding behind and made her way across the field toward the snow cave. Seeing that the entrance was only a few inches wide now, she knelt and cleared it out. The man was still lying on the sleeping bag she'd taken from his backpack, his chest still moving with his breathing. He was still unconscious.
"Hello?"
she said.
"Are you awake, sir? Can you hear me?"
Her voice seemed to echo through the vacuum of night. The man didn't stir. She reached down and poked his shoulder. Still nothing. The sun would be up soon. It had to happen now. She took the nylon strands of the parachute and pulled until they were taut against his weight, then dug her feet into the snow and heaved. The man's body inched up the ramp and out of the snow cave. She collapsed, gasping beside him, her heart pounding. He was out. Now all she had to do was get him onto the sled and drag him 2 miles back to the cabin. That was all. She lay on the snow, staring up at the flickering stars. Exhaustion was taking hold. The desire for sleep was overwhelming. Nothing could have been more wonderful than to close her eyes and succumb to it. Her body ached. Her shoulders and arms still burned from dragging the man out of the snow cave. But she had to keep on. Stopping now would mean failure. She wouldn't accept that. The sled was 4 feet long. He was about 6. If it weren't for his broken legs, she would have pulled him behind her, letting his limbs drag on the snow as they went. She could hardly let his head flounder over the end of the sled, could she? She brought the sled alongside his body. It was his only chance. If his legs had to drag, so be it. Perhaps there was a way she could make him more comfortable. The man's backpack was still in the snow cave, and she went back inside to retrieve it. The rope she'd seen earlier was coiled at the bottom. He drew it out. It was too long, but she had the knife she'd taken from the house. She cut 6 lengths, each about 18 inches long. This was going to take a few minutes, so she took the brandy from her pocket and, reaching down, opened the man's lips to pour it into his mouth. He spluttered it back up at first, but she lifted his head and noted with some satisfaction how he swallowed back at least some of it. She took some herself, feeling the heat of it all the way down to her stomach. It took her about 2 or 3 minutes to collect several sturdy branches, each about 3 or 4 inches in diameter. She dropped them down next to the airman's body in preparation for what was going to be the hard part. She took off her gloves. The cold seemed to attack her hands, but she ignored the pain, focusing on what she had to do. She placed one hand on the man's left ankle and pushed her other hand up inside his pants, feeling for the bone. It was broken a couple of inches below the knee. Ideally, she would have said it as soon as she'd found him, but she'd had more pressing matters to deal with at that time. The man grimaced under her touch, but she pressed on, lining the bone up under his skin as she applied a slow, strong pull to the bottom of his leg. The bone moved back into place, and she took 2 branches and tied one to each side of his leg with the rope she'd cut. The leg was set and immobilized, as long as the rope held. She checked the lengths again. They were tight. It was as good as she could have expected. Now she had to do the same for his right leg. She reached under his pants leg again, feeling for the bone. This break didn't seem as severe. She set the bone in place and tied the branches to each side of his leg. She stood still for a few seconds.
"Who are you?"
she whispered. She waited a moment, as if he was going to sit up and answer her question. But there was no sound from his lips, just the whine of the wind as it began to swirl around them once more. It had to be almost 7. There was no time to waste. She took his backpack on her shoulders and slipped him out of the parachute. Its purpose served. She couldn't leave it on him. It could catch on the ground. It was heavy. People had been executed for being caught with less. Even if the Gestapo wasn't looking for him, someone finding a parachute up here would lead to questions that would lead to him. She could risk bringing it, because if they were caught, there would be no explaining him away with or without the parachute. She folded it up as best as she could, getting it down to a manageable armload of nylon before placing it on top of him. She took the remaining length of rope, around 20 feet, and looped it around the sled, securing him to it, and the parachute to his chest. She pulled the rope tight, but allowed the man space to breathe. Then they were ready. She took the tie at the front of the sled and pulled. The sled moved along the smooth surface of the snow, and they set off. The first few hundred yards were relatively easy as they made their way across the snowy meadow. But the fastest way back to the house involved moving through some trees and across a frozen stream. That wasn't going to be possible while pulling the man behind her. She was going to have to stick to the trails, and that increased her chances of meeting someone. She thought of whom she might meet, and of the deficit of trust the Nazis had created among the German people. The pistol still weighed heavy in her pocket. She had forgotten to take it out of her coat. For every easy downhill slope, there was another uphill to negotiate, and the steep climb to the cabin at the very end of the journey awaited her. She would be at her absolute weakest then. She kept on, though her muscles were beginning to fail. She could feel the strength leaking from her. Her breaths grew deeper and more pronounced. Sweat began to freeze against her exposed skin. She knew how dangerous that was, how frostbite could follow, but she didn't stop. There could be no stopping. She kept on as the sun peaked over the horizon. There was no joy in its coming, no comfort in the dawn. She was almost a mile from the cabin, and the cloak of night was unraveling by the second. The sound of footsteps came from in front. It was hard at first to tell quite where from. She stood silent, her pulse racing. Her ears were attuned to the silence, and she could clearly make out the sound of approaching footsteps along the trail. She looked back at the man on the sled. It was hard to tell how much time they had, but she doubted it was more than a minute. The trail curved ahead, which meant that the person approaching would be out of sight until it was too late. She pulled the sled off the trail and down behind a line of trees. She did her best to hide him, covering him with some loose branches. The tracks they'd made along the path itself were still visible. Anyone could have noticed where they'd stopped. She pressed her hand over her mouth to stop the sound of her breathing. A minute dragged by, the noises getting ever louder. The figure came into view. She recognized the man, and almost laughed as she shook her head. It was Herr Berkel, her ex-boyfriend's father. She knew without hesitation that he would report her. Daniel was in the Gestapo. Nothing would have given Herr Berkel more pleasure. He was about 60 feet away now, ambling along the trail, walking stick in hand. It had been years since she'd spoken to him, back when she and Daniel were together. He was a gruff man, lacking any charm or refinement. He lived close by. This was probably his morning routine. He was a large man, well over 60 years old. Her hand went to the gun in her pocket. What was she prepared to do to protect a man she'd encountered just hours before, one whom she'd never spoken to? She probably didn't even know his real name. Looking at Herr Berkel brought back clear images of the evils that had swallowed her country. She moved her eyes to the man on the sled and felt every bit of hope left within her. He had already saved her life, just as she had saved his. Berkel stopped on the trail about 20 feet short of where they were hiding. He leaned back, stretching out his lower back, and retrieved a cigarette from his pocket. He placed it between his lips, struck a match, and inhaled the smoke. She could just about make out his face from where she was hiding. His eyes appeared to focus, and he began to walk again, although more slowly this time, while staring down at the trail. He looked right and then left, within a few feet of where they were hiding. He stopped, and her heart almost stopped with him. Her finger was on the trigger. She was ready. She was prepared to draw her gun on a man she'd known for most of her life, to protect a man she'd found only a few hours before. Where would she hide the body? She had to make sure it didn't come to that. Herr Berkel shook his head and resumed along the trail. He moved past where they were hiding and kept on, seemingly unaware of their presence. She waited 5 minutes until she poked her head out onto the trail. Tears formed in her eyes as tension gripped her. She grasped the rope on the front of the sled and managed to coax her aching arms into dragging the man back up onto the trail. The sun was bright in the crisp blue sky, illuminating the beauty the snows the night before had created. The layer of white was undisturbed, except for the trail Herr Berkel had left. She resumed pulling the man along, her thoughts returning to getting him back to the cabin alive. There were no other walkers out that morning. She removed her hand from the pistol in her pocket and used it to pull the sled. Every thought disappeared from her mind, until the only thing she could picture was getting back to the cabin. There was nothing else now. It was all that the world existed for. One painful step followed another, until the last hill came into view. She hadn't taken a rest other than the one that Herr Birkel's presence had forced upon her. But she sat now, regaining her breath before the final test. She had come so far. There was just this one hill left, and then the house on top held the promise of food, water, painkillers, and, more importantly, sleep. She looked over at him.
We're nearly home. It's just a little farther now.
The muscles in her legs almost gave out, but she fought the pain and weakness and stood up straight and tall, grasping the rope tied to the sled. She pulled and heaved and sweated and made it to the house. She struggled for breath as she put a hand on the front door and pushed it open. She dragged the sled inside, leaving a trail of snow and muck that she'd have to clean up later. He was here, inside the cabin. It felt like a miracle. She dragged him into the living room and left him in front of the embers of last night's fire. There was just enough wood there to make it up again, and she took a few minutes to light it. Her hat and coat felt like a second skin as she peeled them off. She went to the kitchen and gulped down several cups of water before going to him. She held the cup to his lips, dribbling water into his mouth. He managed to swallow some of it. He was a filthy, stinking mess and had two broken legs, but he was alive, and that was enough for now. She left him there, unconscious but safe, in front of the fire. Then she went to the bedroom, took off her clothes, and was asleep as soon as she felt the pillow against her face. Chapter 3. The ticking of a clock. The chimes. He blinked his eyes open and found himself lying in a pool of filthy sweat and tied to a length of wood. A stormy haze had settled between his ears, and it took a few seconds to remember where he was, let alone why he was here. The agony in his leg shot up through his torso. He could take pain, but enough was enough, and he looked around the room for an escape. The dying embers of a fire glowed red in the fireplace a few feet away. He was alone. Had he been captured? He could expect no mercy. Where were they? The memory of his family appeared through the clouds of his consciousness. His father, his mother, and his wife. His ex-wife now. The vague remembrance of their divorce was new to him again for a few seconds. Then the letter she'd written him appeared in his mind, and he was back there, hovering above his bunk in basic training, watching himself reading it. Glimpses of his past life appeared, and then retreated into the abyss. He tried to recall something about the present, about where he was now. The feeling of hands on his body, of being dragged along. It all came to him more as an essence than a solid memory he could cling to. It was as if he could feel the moment, perhaps even smell, and touch it. Picturing it was beyond him. He tried to rouse himself off the wooden platform he was on, whatever it was, but his efforts came to nothing as he fell back onto it again. His eyelids felt like they weighed 1,000 tons. He had time just to glance around the room before they shut, and he succumbed to the mercy of sleep once more. The light of the day had dwindled by the time she awoke in the early evening. She sat up in the bed. Her empty stomach growled. The muscles in her arms, shoulders, and back were as stiff as a tortoise shell. She worked her fingers into the grooves where hard muscle met bone and sinew at the top of her shoulders, doing her best to massage away the pain. The living room door was ajar a few inches. She peered out at the man passed out there. She sat still, listening for sounds that weren't there. Nothing was moving other than the wind through the trees outside. She got out from under the covers and stood beside the bed, almost against her own will. She went to the wardrobe and slipped into a simple gray dress. The cold floor stung her feet, and she put on thick woolen socks before sliding into slippers. She inched out, a stranger in her own house. The first thing she saw were his legs and the splint she'd fashioned on either side of each one. He wasn't moving. His eyes were still closed.
"Hello, sir,"
she whispered.
"Are you awake?"
Nothing. She took a deep breath, trying to slow down her heart. Sweat was forming on her palms. His short brown hair was thick with muck and still wet from the snow. His unshaven face was scratched and caked with filth. He didn't seem to have moved. She reached down to check for a pulse. His heartbeat was steady and even. He would survive this. She went to the kitchen and came back with a cupful of water and dribbled some in between his lips. Once again, he seemed to swallow some of it between coughing and spluttering away the rest. She knelt beside him and reached under the sled to untie the rope that held him in place. She thought about slicing the rope, but decided against that. She might need it again if he proved unwilling to cooperate. The rope fell beneath the sled, and she moved the parachute aside. She reached for the straps on his shoulders, which had held the parachute in place, and had little difficulty slipping them off. The problem of what to do with the parachute remained. Hiding a parachute was the kind of subversive act that could land a citizen in jail, or worse. Burning it would produce toxic fumes. For the time being, she dumped it in a pile near the back door. He was going to need bed rest. The sled, even though it had left a trail of dirt when she pushed him into the house earlier, was still the best way of moving him around. She got down on her knees and turned the sled around, angling it toward the spare room, where she and Frady had slept on summer nights as children. It had been empty for years. The man lay immobile as she pushed the sled into the bedroom. The door was already open, the bed made, and the room immaculately clean. She tried to remember who had slept there last. It must have been her, or maybe even Frady. She could recall her father taking Frady up here, but that was years before the war, before Frady had become too much for their father to take care of alone, before she'd deserted them. She wiped the memories away like grime off a windshield and endeavored to focus on the problems at hand. She went back into the living room for his backpack. Clean, civilian clothes lay folded at the bottom, but there was nothing he could sleep in, and she certainly wasn't going to have him lying around the house in his underwear. Some of her father's old clothes would fit him. Within a few minutes, she'd found a pair of his old pajamas and a wine-colored bathrobe. She went back in and threw the pajamas on the bed, but held onto the bathrobe for a few seconds, feeling the smoothness of the material between her fingers. The past was everywhere here. There was no escaping it. The man was soiled and grimy. The first thing he'd need was a bath, and that would be easier while he was still unconscious. She reached down and ran her fingers along the rough splint she'd made to keep his bones in place. They would need to be replaced. Getting him to a hospital, or even a doctor, didn't seem worth the risk. She couldn't trust anyone. Could he be trusted? She had heard the radio reports about the Allies, and knew better than to trust the Nazis' view of the Americans as uneducated mongrels, and the British as treacherous wretches. Still, she had never met an Allied soldier before. The countless newsreels and stories over the years had reinforced in her mind the Nazis' view of the Allies. It was impossible to dismiss all she'd seen and heard, even with her mistrust of the government and the media it controlled. She had seen what the Allies had done to Germany. They'd bombed cities full of citizens without mercy. It was difficult to see them as saviors, no matter how much she wanted to. His lips twitched, his eyes rolling like slugs under his closed eyelids. She stood back in fright, expecting them to open. She hadn't even considered what she was going to say or do when he awoke. Fortunately, his face settled back into its previous catatonic state, and the dilemma was postponed. Franca walked into the kitchen. The house was frigid. Herr Graf, or whoever he was, could wait until she set a fire. She cleared out some of the ashes from the burner, pushing charred logs out of the way with a poker that had been in this house longer than she'd been alive. She struck a match, and the light from the fire enveloped the kitchen. She always took so much pleasure in setting a fire, and stood back, watching the logs take to the kindling she'd placed underneath them. Satisfied, she went to the cupboard. There wasn't much food, just some old cans of soup. The provisions she'd brought were almost gone. The roads to town would be cut off for days. Her car would be useless. She went to the medicine cabinet and found an old bottle of aspirin with 9 pills left, enough to last him about 12 hours. He was going to need more, and stronger medicine than that, especially if she had to set the bones in his legs again. The bottle rattled like a baby's toy as she put it in her pocket. She took one of the wooden chairs from the old table in the middle of the room. It would do. She raised the chair above her head and brought it crashing down to the floor below. Nothing happened. The chair remained intact. She shook her head, laughing to herself. She went to the sink and got a hammer and several screwdrivers of various sizes. A few minutes later, she had the sturdy wood she would need to set his legs until she could do a more permanent job of it. She went to the bedroom. The man hadn't moved. She had dealt with worse breaks before, but that had been in a hospital. How would his bones heal without casts? The question of getting the plaster and setting it herself didn't worry her so much as the suspicion that purchasing it might bring. If she was careful, she might just be able to get away with buying it and the food and the morphine she was going to need. The question of how she was going to get into town remained, but she pushed it away for now. She untied each of the ropes holding the twig splints in place and set the splints aside as firewood. The next part was going to be difficult for the man, unconscious or not. Those filthy pants and boots had to come off. She began working on the laces, intermittently glancing up at his face, aware of every grimace she was causing him. She opened the laces and applied gentle pressure to the boot as she tried to pull it off. The bone in his leg moved, and he cried out. It was bizarre to see him react. It was like a marionette wailing after being dropped on the floor. She stopped, expecting him to waken, but he didn't. The boot came off, and she moved her hands back up to feel the bone. It had moved, but not much, and she set it back in place, lining it up. The man's right boot dropped onto the thinly carpeted floor with a thud. She took a deep breath and steeled herself for the next leg. She didn't want to cut the laces. Boots were a valuable asset these days. It took another 5 minutes to get it off. The experience she'd garnered on his other leg lent to a smoother process this time. The socks came off 1 inch at a time, revealing bruised and swollen feet. Scissors from the living room made short work of the man's pants, and soon he was lying in his underwear, still on the sled. The pieces of the chair made for adequate splints, and his legs held taut. The Luftwaffe blazer came off next, and she tossed it into the corner of the room. The shirt came off with similar ease, and he was ready to be put on the bed. She made her way around behind him and eased him off the sled. The bed was mercifully low, and she leaned his torso against it. She dragged him up onto the clean covers, aware that he was still covered in dirt. But he was on the bed. She stood back, in momentary triumph, marveling at the sight of this unknown man, lying on her old bed, in her father's summer cabin in the mountains. It was good that he was going to be unconscious for his bath. It would not be the first one she'd given, but it would be the first she'd given to a sleeping stranger, and not in a hospital. Time was of the essence. The last thing she wanted was for him to wake up while she was rubbing him down. Nothing could have been more improper.
"Bath time, darling,"
she smiled.
"How was your day? You won't believe what happened to me on the way home from the hospital."
She made sure not to speak loudly enough that he might wake. No joke would have been worth that. She put a tub of water she'd warmed down beside the bed and took the washcloth in her hand. Dried dirt turned to mud as she sprinkled water from the cloth on his face. She wiped him off with strong hands.
"I found a man. Yes, a man. Lying in the snow. In a Luftwaffe uniform, no less."
She hadn't talked to another soul in days. It felt good to be speaking out loud, even if it was to an unconscious stranger.
"No, darling, I'm being quite serious. You know it's not the place of a good German wife to make fun of her husband. Not with our brave soldiers risking their lives for the future of the glorious Reich on the Russian front as we speak."
She placed her hand on his now clean face.
"What's that? You want to hear the radio? Well, it's my duty as a good wife to obey your every whim."
She went to the living room and flicked on the battery-powered radio. The usual mess of news and propaganda was soiling the airwaves of the German stations. Radios were issued by the government and were only capable of picking up the government-sanctioned stations. Most people knew how to doctor them to get the foreign channels, however, and she was able to tune in to a Swiss broadcast of a new hit from Tommy Dorsey and his band. The big band Swing drifted through the cabin. The music gave her pause, washcloth still in hand. Somewhere, people were still creating music like this, still listening and dancing and living. Suddenly, she felt connected once more with a world she'd given up on. In silence, she finished washing down the man and let the music flow through her.
"All clean,"
she said. She placed the aspirin on the bedside table along with a glass of water. She tucked him under the sheets and stowed hot water bottles by his feet. Who was he? Why was he here? How on earth was she going to keep his presence here a secret over the 6 weeks or so it would take those bones to heal? How would he react to her once he woke up? She stood in the doorway staring at him for several minutes, the music still floating through the air, before giving in to the hunger pangs stabbing at her stomach.
"Tomorrow will be the day,"
she said out loud.
"Tomorrow, I find out who you are."
She took the key from the door and locked it behind her. Her hunger took precedence over her need for a bath, so she went to the cupboard for a can of soup. Some bread would have been fantastic, but she'd finished the last of it, along with the cheese she'd brought the night before. It was to have been her last meal. She sat back at the table, staring into space as the soup heated on the stove, and making a mental list of what she was going to need to keep her and the man in the bedroom alive through the winter. Somehow, she was going to have to make it to Freiburg to get food, gauze, plaster of Paris, aspirin, and morphine. A journey of almost 10 miles each way. In ordinary circumstances, she would have driven in, but the weather had taken simplicity out of the equation. She got out of the seat and went to the closet near the back door. Her old cross-country skis lay untouched at the back, behind some old winter coats and other pieces of assorted junk that had built up over the years. It had been more than a decade since she'd used them, not since she was a teenager, back when her mother was still alive and they'd come up here every winter. She reached in and felt the weight of the skis in her hands. It seemed she had no other choice.